But I want to wrap up message on Daniel that I started last week called Dare to be a Daniel. And computers are wonderful, but I'm just waiting for a page to load here. So in your bulletins, there is an outline with the fill in the blanks. It already has the first part filled in for you. And those of you who are watching online, if you get the electronic bulletin, you can just click and fill in the blanks on that one. That's pretty cool. So our theme for 2021 is redeeming the time. And for those of you who are visiting with us this morning, or those of you who may be just tuning in, we've been going through the book of Daniel and talking about how God preserves his people and guides them through difficult times. Last week, we started Daniel chapter 6, which is also known as Daniel in the Lion's Den. I think that's one of the most popular Sunday school stories there is, Daniel in the Lion's Den. And growing up in Sunday school, the church that I grew up in, we used to sing a song about Daniel called Dare to be a Daniel. Does anybody remember that song? Oh, a few people. Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, dare to make it known. Well, now in Sunday school, we learned everybody's like, well, be like Daniel, right? But are any of us prepared to go through what Daniel went through? Rather than just saying, be like Daniel, maybe we need to say, like the song, dare to be a Daniel. It's easy to believe God when times are good, but how do we find faith in difficult times? You know, there are these things called tests. You know what a test is? A test is a circumstance that's designed to show us what we're made of. That's where we find out which is stronger, the image of God in us or our human weakness. Time and providence will show that surrendering to God leads to human thriving. So what exactly are we daring to do? We'll dare to be trusted, dare to be faithful, dare to prosper. That's our outline. We've already covered the first part, dare to be trusted. We said Daniel has a reputation for telling the truth, even when it wasn't to his benefit. Remember, he was one of three high officials in Babylon, in the Medo-Persian Empire, that were tasked with keeping all of the other officials, all of the other governors honest. And of the three, the other two were part of the conspiracy to get Daniel, which means he was the only one between corruption of the entire empire and the truth. That's just how much was at stake. So here was the first three fill-in-the-blanks. These are already filled in for you. Be known for doing what is right. Be consistent in your convictions. Follow your principles. Remember, we said that the key to good character is consistency. People need to know what to expect from you. We try to be consistent, but our hearts are divided. At the very least, we're flesh and we're spirit. You know, sometimes I'm in the flesh, sometimes I'm walking in the spirit. Only God is faithful. And we learn faithfulness from God. That's how we learn to be faithful. So this is the second heading, dare to be faithful. You remember we began this series in Daniel with the statement, God is faithful. Remember that? And our appropriate response to God's faithfulness is to be what we know about God. It's called mirroring. Mirroring is the essence of relationship. What do I mean? Well, as babies, how do we learn to communicate? Right? We learn to mimic the sounds, the gestures, the facial expressions of others. That's why we all get silly when we're with the baby. Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You're so cute, aren't you? You know, we're hoping the baby's like, mimicking our facial expressions. You know, we all hope for that day when they say mama or dada, you know? As children, we learn to behave by mirroring adults. That's also how we learn to behave badly, by mirroring adults. In courtship, we learn to notice, we notice what makes the other person happy, what they respond to, and we do that more because we want them to like us. So how do we mirror God's faithfulness? We do that by reflecting, doing the very attributes that we see in God. And by not doing those things that would turn us from God, that would not resemble God. So here are a couple of don'ts. The first fill in the blank. Don't give in to pressure. Let's pick up in Daniel chapter 6, verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open towards Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. So what was Daniel's reaction? Remember, they railroaded this piece of legislation through that was specifically designed to take him down? He was consistent. He did exactly what he always did. He prayed and he worshiped the God of Israel. You know, I find this interesting. We don't have any indication in this story that Daniel ever tried to fight this. We know that he knew about it. He had to know that he was walking right into a trap. But if changing his behavior to avoid prosecution, he risks an even greater offense, losing his connection with the God who is the source of his strength and the source of his life. Talk about pressure. What would you do? What would you do if it was suddenly illegal to be a Christian? There's a popular quote which has been attributed to numerous authors. It's the question, if you were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Would there? Daniel didn't even try to hide the evidence. He willingly embraced the charge and the consequences. Now, I'm not suggesting that we all go out and do things that are going to get us persecuted, right? That would be stupid. We avoid trouble where we can. But even the most devout believer would flee persecution when necessary. Whenever possible, that is, without compromise. So then the question we have to ask ourselves in these situations is, am I doing what I'm doing out of faith? Or am I responding out of fear? Is my choice that I'm making out of faith, or is it out of fear? Am I relying on someone other than God for security, or am I acting in obedience to God? While you mull that over, let's go to the next fill in the blank. Don't give in to discouragement. Don't give in to discouragement. Verses 12 to 15. And they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? And the king answered and said, The thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed, and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed." Notice the one who's discouraged here. It's not Daniel. I find it interesting that even though their intention is to trap Daniel, the one who gets trapped into doing something that he doesn't want to do is King Darius. Darius never intended for Daniel to go to the lions. He trusted Daniel. And he spends all day trying to find a legal way around it. Ancient laws sometimes contained the clause that a law must be enforced before sundown. And that seems to be the case here. So he worked until sundown to see if he could find a way around it. You know, the question's often raised whether Christians should always obey the law. You would think that Darius, being the king, would be able to make an exception, right? He's the king, right? The problem is, once you make an exception to the law, now the law is arbitrary. The king is the law, and the law loses its meaning, loses its force. So it follows then that if you break the law, you accept the consequences of breaking the law. But if you disregard it, then you're saying that there is no consequences, and you're disparaging everything that the law represents. James says essentially the same thing. James 2:10, if you obey every law except one, then you're guilty of breaking them all. So by breaking the law, especially if you think there should be no consequences, you're basically saying that the law means nothing to you. You're breaking it all. The nature of law is that those who make laws must obey the law, especially those who make laws must obey the law. Daniel knowingly breaks the law. Why? Well, first of all, this law has one purpose, and that is to trap Daniel into choosing whether he's going to obey God or obey the law. Now, based on all you've learned so far from this book, which way do you think Daniel is going to go? Yes, he's going to obey God. Because the king's authority comes from God, right? God is the one who sets kings in authority. So, if the king is off course, who do you have to appeal to? God. So are you going to offend the one that is your appeal? Or are you going to offend the law? The choice we have in those rare cases when we need to break the rules is to accept the consequences. Throughout history, Christians have had to endure consequences of choosing to obey God rather than man. They've lost homes, jobs, positions, money. I grew up Mennonite. That's what many of my Anabaptist ancestors had to endure for their faith. They needed to leave regions and countries and start over in another place. They were mocked, beaten, even killed for following Christ. You know, Jesus told us that this was going to happen. John 15:18-19. I'm going to read this in the New Living Translation. If the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. The world would love you as its own if you belonged to it. But you're no longer part of the world. I chose you to come out of the world. And so it hates you. Why would Jesus warn us about being hated? So that you don't become discouraged when it happens. it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. In fact, you may be doing exactly what is right. And that is what they hate. Corrupt people don't want you to be right. They want you to be like them. You know, misery loves company. They don't think that they can ever be good, or they don't think that they can ever be good enough, so they have to make it bad to be good, and good to be bad. Does that scare you? Let me let you in on a little secret. It's the people that are doing these things are the ones who are really scared. And that brings me to our next fill in the blank. Don't give in to fear. Don't give in to fear. Verses 16 to 18. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing may be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. You know, through most of this story, we're seeing the king's reactions. We're not really told about Daniel's responses. However, verse 16 might provide a clue. You know what the king is doing here? He is praying for Daniel's deliverance. Where did he get that idea? I don't know, maybe from Daniel, perhaps? Just because you face some impossible situation or crisis, know that God always has the last word. And God shows up in the impossible. You know, they say it's darkest just before the dawn. Scientifically, that's not really true. But if it were true, it's because it feels darkest because we're tired from waiting. It's also said that the time when most people give up is right before their breakthrough. Daniel was delivered from the lions. However, many others have died waiting for their breakthrough. But the good news is, you can't lose. If you're a believer in Christ, even if you die, you win. If you die for the sake of the gospel, your reward is waiting for you. If you die trusting for healing, you're still healed. Death is not the worst thing that can happen to you. Dying without Jesus is. Now, Daniel wasn't the only one to face lions. Christians in first century Rome were often handed that same punishment, not for doing wrong, but for doing right. Here's a little quote out of a Bible encyclopedia. "Very soon, disasters began to fall thickly upon the Roman Empire, and blame was laid upon the Christians." Skipping ahead. "Now, in times of disaster, Christians became the scapegoats. If famine, drought, pestilence, earthquake, or any other public calamity threatened, the cry was raised, 'The Christians to the lions.'" This view of Christianity as subversive of the Roman Empire survived the fall of Rome. The heathen forgot, as the apologist showed, that Rome had been visited by the greatest calamities before the Christian era, and that Christians were the most self-sacrificing in periods of public distress, lending assistance to pagan and Christian alike. You think history repeats itself? I may be wrong, but it appears that times like these may be happening again in America. It's not a time for fear, though. It's a time for faith. It's a time to rise above the normal reaction and demonstrate a courage that can only come from God. It's time to dare to be a Daniel. We will not cower in fear, but like Daniel, we're going to thrive, even in Babylon. That brings me to my last point, dare to prosper. I think it's important that in the coming days we are prepared to be resilient through difficult times. Part of that is being prepared for suffering and learning to endure hardship. But part of that is also cultivating a sense of hope and expectancy for God's goodness, because ultimately that is our destiny. We're focused on God's goodness. And we're going to see God's goodness in Daniel's story as well. Next, fill in the blank. Live expecting miracles. Amen, Pastor Kurt? I know that's one of your favorite subjects. Live expecting miracles, verses 19 and 20. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Now, I keep saying that this is Daniel's story, but actually Darius shows up as the primary character in much of the story. I think he gets best supporting actor for helping to understand a lead who is mostly absent from the story. I wonder what kind of influence Daniel must have had on Darius. You know, he came out of retirement to be one of Darius's top three and was in the process of becoming the top one. He was already a legend in that part of the world because of his wisdom and his ability to interpret dreams. The other thing he was known for was his impeccable character, honesty, and integrity. But the truth is, we don't actually know much about Daniel. Most of what we know is what we learn from his interaction with others, the impact that he had on others, like Darius. And here's another time where we learn about Daniel through someone else. King Darius is fasting. Where did he learn that? And he's probably been praying all night. Who taught him to pray? And now we see him exercising great faith. Wait, what? Great faith? King Darius? Do you see what's happening here? He's coming to the lion's den and calling for Daniel. Have you ever thought about it? He wouldn't be there if he didn't expect a miracle. If he were not expecting a miracle, he would have sent someone else, right? Go and tell me how bad it is. Did you find anything? A bone? Scrap of cloth? Piece of flesh? But he goes himself, calling for Daniel. Now, the other high officials devised what they thought was a plan to get rid of Daniel, but that God used it to draw the heart of King Darius, whom, by the way, he was going to use to restore Israel, to faith. Next, fill in the blank. Live expecting God's favor. Pick up in verse 21. Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no harm." Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those who had maliciously accused Daniel, I have to tell you, it's not in my notes, but maliciously accused, there is a play on words in the Hebrew. Those who devoured Daniel were devoured by the lions. God is good, but life is not always fair. There are times that we suffer for doing what is right, but that does not make it wrong to do right. There is a rebellion going on in the unseen realm. We talked about this. We studied it. There's a rebellion going on to keep us from seeing and responding to God's goodness. God's grace and favor will win in the end. But in the meantime, we are tested to see if we humans will respond in a way that many heavenly beings did not. You can trust God's favor. Anything that is not good is not God, and he will deliver you in the end. God doesn't cause suffering, but he uses it for his glory. God turns bad things into good things. That's who he is, and that's what he does. I find it amusing that Daniel's reply to the king was, "Live forever." I'm sure that that's what he was used to saying. You know, that's what you say to the king, like you say, "Long live the queen," right? But you know, perhaps King Darius really will live forever because of putting his faith and trust in the God of Daniel. It doesn't matter who you are, there's only one way to live forever, and that's putting your faith and trust in Jesus Christ. And here's the last fill in the blank. Live expecting God's kingdom. Verses 25 to 28. This is Darius's decree. Then Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. By the way, that could also be said the reign of Darius, also known as Cyrus the Persian. God's kingdom is forever. God has a plan and a purpose that he will accomplish throughout history. And he is writing history as we speak. You know, as we watch the news, we get all caught up in pandemics, politics, race riots, reports of fraud and corruption. You know, all of that has been around since the Babylonian Empire, since the Medo-Persian Empire. But do you know what is not around anymore? The Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, or the Roman Empire. Man-made empires come and go. But the spirit that is behind those empires simply reinvents itself as something else. What has never disappeared is the kingdom of God. Jesus Christ, you remember, is that rock in Nebuchadnezzar's dream that topples all the empires of men. And that rock has grown into a mountain, slowly, steadily, and surely. So are you living for yourself, or are you living for the kingdom? You know, most of us want to feel accomplished by what we achieve in our lifetime, but living for the kingdom means that my life is now something, a part of something much, much bigger than me. In fact, my life may just be a seed that is planted, and the fruit of which may not be seen for generations. Next time we're going to zoom in. Excuse me, next time we're going to zoom out and we're going to look at the big picture of history, of some of Daniel's dreams and visions. But now I'd like to just ask some questions for reflection. As Pat, as you come. So let's reflect on what we've heard. First of all, can you be trusted? Are you consistent in your character and convictions? Do people know what to expect from you? Can God give you a really big assignment and know that you will follow through? Can he give you a little assignment and know that you'll follow through? Are you faithful? In what ways do you mirror God's character? What is the source of your strength? And when you find yourself caught between faith and fear, which side usually wins? Number three, have you ever been in trouble for doing what is right? Well, you're in good company. How might you put that experience in perspective? Are you living for a kingdom that's vastly bigger and outlasts the kingdoms of this world? Let's worship the Lord together as we think about these things.